Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this week's episode of Before I'm Successful. Today's guest, Casper. I've been thinking for a while on how to introduce you, and I really didn't know how to start because should I just say that you are the guy that has this impressive ability to focus at an extreme level, I could say, on lots of topics and be able to deconstruct them and understand them extremely fast? Or should I just say that you are the guy that's insane enough to jump out of planes? Or should I just say that you are the friend with whom I've tried for the first time to start a company, a proper company that was actually trying to accomplish something, not just a side hustle like the UFO. But then I came up with this brilliant idea of just stating all these things and welcoming you to Before I'm Successful, Casper.
It's been glad to.
I'm glad that you managed to make the time. So, I'm curious about jumping out of planes because I've wanted to do this for a while now. And how does it feel like to be doing that?
I mean, so in general, yeah, it's incredibly unforgettable experience. Though, actually, I'm not that experienced as well. So far, I've done, only 3 jumps. When you get actually the drop zone, there are like people, like I think average is 30 jumps per person, including all of the students that just came there. But there are like people who jumped hundreds of times. My instructor jumped like 14,000 times, which is incredible. But yeah, in general, it's kind of a great thing to do, I would say. If you want to, if you work your stress and you want just to quickly relax and get all of these emotions out, yeah, it's incredible.
So you've jumped a few times, and I'm curious, did that experience help you in any way to conquer some of your fears? Like, you've seen death in front of your eyes under you.
I mean, okay, in theory, it's actually safer than driving a car, but mostly it's fun, though I think, I have like quite big fear of heights
still.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And I think it's kind of going away with time. Mm-hmm. I think skydiving is a really good way to get rid of it, because you just fly up the plane, and then at least first jumps you just don't think down, don't look down, and you just completely don't think about this. You just, when the time comes, you just put your feet out of the plane, sit on the edge on like 5,000 feet above, and on the command, just without thinking, just muscle memory from the previous training, you just get into position and you're out. There's no point where you actually think about not jumping, because it just happens automatically. Mm-hmm. And then once your canopy opens, once you're under canopy, then the moment comes when you can look down and actually think what you've just done. And then I'm like scared as fuck usually. But yeah, it's already too late to do anything about this. I just have to literally fly down, and there's no other way. So I guess, yeah, that's kind of one of the best ways to get rid of that fear. Though I did it mostly for just to relax. Had just some spare money from the internship. Mm-hmm. And saying what's the best way to do crazy things than university.
So how much do you have to train before your first jump, and what does training for jumping out of plane look like?
So I mean, it's actually very easy. If you actually want to jump, you can just, so if you're a student, it's actually extremely easy. There's at our university, there's Skydiving Society. You can just sign up, and they drive you to the drop zone. You have 1 day of like training on the ground, going through all of the things you have to do in the air, before jumping, how to check your rig, how to open the parachute, how to check canopy when it's open, how to basically jump out of the plane. You train kind of tens of times the whole procedure of getting your feet out of the plane, getting into position, jumping properly, then steering the canopy. And it's basically 1 day, like 8 to 10 hours of like training on the ground. So very simple, it just takes 1 day. And then next day you can jump. So right now, I'm still like kind of very beginner level. I had 3 jumps, and I want to track for skydiving license. But first jumps are on the static line, so you jump out of the plane, and your rig is attached on the line to the plane, and the parachute opens automatically. And then with time you progress to kind of higher levels. So right now I'm pulling my own ripcord to open a parachute, but it's kind of damn ripcord. So if I don't pull it, my parachute will still open. Actually my last jump was, I was supposed to, jump off the plane, get into position, pull my ripcord, and I reached with the wrong hand and I didn't pull it. So yeah, I'm really glad I was attached to the plane actually.
Right.
With time, I think it takes minimum 16 jumps, but usually people fail something on the way up. So on average, like 20 jumps to get licensed, and then you can jump fully on your own. Yeah.
So what do you do when the parachutes get tangled up?
Oh yeah, so you have whole training beforehand as well on the day. Depending like how it tangles up, you have all. So if it's just like lines are twisted or tangled, you can usually get out of it by like untwisting them or untangling them. But if it's like in critical state that actually there's not much you can do, or you still have the terminal velocity,
right.
You just cut away the main parachute and open the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as a side note, the first time you told me this story, you said that after that first day of training, you had to sleep there. Can you tell the folks about that?
Yeah, so basically in the drop zone, there's... there's no like hotel or anything. There's just like a thing called bunkhouse, which is basically a shed without heating, without anything. I probably shouldn't say that, but like in practice, like in theory, it's illegal to sleep there, but like no one...
But not when you're a boss.
No one really, really kind of...
Yeah, they don't care about it.
Yeah, no one cares about it. It's basically a shed with like some very bad quality like beds, just kind of military beds without heating. Some of the rooms, you can't close windows there. So like in the summer, it's all right. But when I was jumping, so I was actually jumping in both February, I believe, and November.
Mm-hmm.
It was like really cold outside. You just have to put 10 layers and you get into very warm sleeping bag and somehow survive it. But yeah, it's actually a nice experience as well.
Did you happen to meet rats in there while you're sleeping there?
So I didn't see any, but yeah, people say, like you can see noises in the night sometimes, yeah. And people say
right.
There are some as well, yeah.
So at 16, you had the first software engineering job, right?
Yeah.
How did you manage to do that? Because there are people that manage to finish university, and even after that, they cannot really get a job, proper job.
Yeah, so that's actually, I had a bit of external help as well. So I was always kind of interested in computer science, but really I learned stuff once I started high school. Back in Poland, high school kind of, these are your last 3 years of pre kind of college education. And like, I was actually... this high school is like completely another story, just completely like made me. Before that I was just this smart guy that always was getting good grades but not working at all. But when I went to this high school, like I came there and it didn't work anymore, just coming to exams and acing them. I started getting like ones and twos, where like in Poland we have grade scale from 1 to 6, 1 is the worst, 6 is the best. And yeah, I realized I actually have to start to work. Plus, we had an amazing computer science teacher, where within the first year, we learned basically fundamentals of programming, like C and C++. And then later, we learned kind of extended C and C++ stuff that we actually here learned at second year of university. So I was kind of very lucky. I came to this high school that actually forced me to work, and since then I kind of just stayed with me, like working almost all the time.
so forced you to change your life.
Yes,
to make
basically.
The,
yeah,
make the difference.
This high school was one of the best things that happened to me in life, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really got into computer science, but it was mostly because I was always interested in computer science, but I actually went to high school more focused on physics. But almost everyone there was just way better than me at both maths and physics. So the course I was focusing on. But no one was that... Like, everyone was still good at computer science, but not extremely good. And I saw this niche there that I can actually... Yeah, I can... This is the thing I can be the best at, you know? So, I really got into it. And then started looking for internship. I don't know, in like second year of high school, so when I was 16, I don't know where this idea actually came from, but I just started applying basically everywhere possible. And actually the internship I got in the end, I got it through like actually connection of my dad. So it's, yeah, we can say it a bit cheated, I went there, so he knew like one guy who had his like smaller software shop, and he, you know, just told him to interview me. So I went then there, the tech guys there interviewed me. They're actually quite impressed that in high school I want to like work during summer holidays. Actually, as they said, most of the students don't really like doing that. And I had my kind of first software engineering job, like working where I could really put the stuff I learned in school into practice. I worked almost for free, less than minimal wage in Poland. But yeah, I was extremely happy. I could do it for free, 100%.
So you said two very interesting things I want to touch upon further. The first one was that you started with physics, but
yeah,
you realized that there are other people that are a lot better than you are.
Yeah.
And then you switched to computer science because you saw this opportunity.
Yeah.
I think that's really important because I know a lot of people that are trying to be the best at something they obviously do not, first of all, enjoy doing, and second of all, they are a lot better at other things. And what do you think about this? You should pretty much always just choose the thing you are the best at, right? Even though it doesn't bring that much money or other things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, because in the end, you know, usually I think people are not, like, it's not that you're just best at something, you're usually also best at this because you really enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, these two things come together very, very often. So then if you're just really good at something and you really enjoy it, even if it gives you, like, less money, short time, I think in the end, the return on that will be like much higher than into other field, both in terms of money, but even if not, then just in terms of your like well-being and happiness, which is in general like the most important thing.
Right.
Because, yeah.
It is true, and you know, furthermore, the second thing you said that you were looking for a job at 16 and they were impressed by the fact that you wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So you were pretty much motivated since back then, since you were pretty young. What motivated you back then? What made you want to be different than pretty much everybody else?
I think the reasons were actually pretty primitive.
Money.
Yeah. I mean, so I remember when before high school, I was just dreaming to like have a normal job and like earn maybe a bit more than the average salary, really. But then I went to the high school that I went to, and actually I got there just because I didn't get into my first choice of high schools. It was my second choice. But yeah, this was the biggest like decision in my life. And the whole kind of class where I went to was framed as just group of very smart students, kind of bit, you know, just elite maths and physics and computer scientists. And the fact that then I had to actually put a lot of hours into high school, I was spending 50 hours a week just in the school, and then afterwards to just basically pass, I had to spend another like 20-30 hours a week, like during weekends and so on, to to just, yeah, just survive there. And just this thought that, you know, first of all, I went in a group where everyone is smart. Plus, additionally, I'm actually putting way more hours than any, like, other of my friends who actually often told me that they're glad they didn't end up in my class because they can have, like, life in high school. So I was just then thinking, yeah, okay, I may not have maybe life in high school, but will pay off and I'll have, like, way better life afterwards. So then I decided, yeah, I actually want more than just normal job. And then with time, I kind of started seeing that it pays off and that I really enjoy it. Like, my happiness when I basically work and try to achieve my goals is, like, way higher than if I just relax and don't do much. So I think this just fueled me. And then once I was achieving, like, further and further goals, you know, there was, like, never enough. So I just always try to achieve more.
It's truly inspiring that since back then you were able to realize the fact that you sacrifice some parties now and other things like that in order to reach the level you're at right now and the level you'll be in the future. And the first job was at 16.
Yeah.
Then at 17, you received an offer from Amazon, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you had the option of going to university.
Yeah.
And you chose the second one. Why?
Actually, I think in general, I think university is really good. Though this choice is, I think, one of the worst choices I've made in my life. I was after this first internship, almost not earning anything. But then, of course, because I got the courage, you know, I saw I can actually work in the industry, despite the fact I'm young. I started, you know, then I went to third year in high school. It was also actually quite interesting. And afterwards, I decided, so I was applying. That's actually a quite long story.
Okay, go ahead. I think we have something to learn from it.
So during my third year in high school, I'll touch on very not related things first. But during my third year in high school, we were also going to, like, local university to pass basically all of the maths module at the computer science course at local university. So once, if we want to go to this university, we already have it done. And we're going, like, with students, just going with them to lectures, to tutorials, everything, passing, like, exams. And then I kind of realized that this university, like, is not what I would expect from the university. Lecturers treated, like, most of the faculty actually treated students as just, you know, idiots and didn't, yeah, basically that was the whole attitude towards students. And to be fair, I mean, a lot of students actually weren't that far from that description. I just decided that's not for me. I always kind of thought about studying in US, but kind of getting to US because the cities and so on is very hard. So I decided, okay, actually I can get into the UK, because it's very easy. I can just do it on my exams. So I'll just apply to different universities. When I decided it in October, before actually, you know, in the, like, last year of my high school in October, so it was too late to apply to Oxbridge. I also decided that I don't want to go, like, to London, Imperial or anything like that, because it's expensive. Like, basically London is expensive. Edinburgh didn't give me an offer. My choice was Birmingham, which is still a great university. And then over the summer, I started applying for internships. I actually got, before Amazon, I got two internship offers from other local companies that really want to hire me. But when they heard that I'm going to study abroad, then they were, like, withdrawing the offer because, you know, it's just not worth for them to get some intern and then he will just never return again. That probably would happen. So then I got a job offer from Amazon they told me I can either work with them, depending on what I decide, whether I go to university or not, I can work with them for a year or more, or just do internship. And actually at that point, I also fucked up my computer science final exam.
You fucked it up?
Yeah.
How did you manage to do
that? That's... It's just... I don't even know.
So what does that mean, to fuck it up? You didn't get 100% or...
Yeah, so basically...
You got 90%?
No, I got 90 from maths and English, and then I had to have an average... over 85 from three exams, and my three exams computer science where I get 78. An average was still over 85, but not everything was over 85.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, what's interesting, with this course I could get to Imperial, because they require only 2 times 90, but yeah, I actually didn't apply. And yeah, in Birmingham didn't give me like an offer immediately. At that point I was also talking with Amazon. Like, Birmingham wasn't giving me an offer, but I called Birmingham a few times. They said, okay, actually I can get in because there's still place. But then they didn't get my documents and couldn't give me an offer. And then I was kind of thinking to work for Amazon for a year and then apply to like Oxbridge and so on afterwards. But my parents pressured me a bit,
mm-hmm.
to like go to university, because you know that's what people should do. And once I go to work, I will never go back to education and so on and so on. So I was like, all right, I'll try to make Birmingham work. My second choice was York. I said, like, if Birmingham won't give me an offer, I won't go to York. I just go work for Amazon, and then I'll apply again next year. And I tried to get this offer from Birmingham, but nothing was coming through because the documents were in there. I sent them again, but yeah, this was just like a mess. And at some point, I remember, I decided, okay, if by the end of this week I don't get anything from Birmingham, I'll just go work. And on Friday, I think close to the evening of this week, I just called Birmingham and told them, okay, if you can give me an offer right now, it's all right, I have stuff to do. I just apply next year, it's completely fine. And then the lady that was talking with me was like, oh, all right, then you're accepted. and that was it. And then actually, so another interesting part is, once I got offered from Amazon, that was just this one of the points when I also realized I can achieve more. And this is, I think, one of these two times in my life where I didn't believe what I've heard over the phone before actually seeing this on paper. Because just the amount of money they offered me, it wasn't much, but it was more than the average salary in Poland. So, you know, just a thought that at 17 I can like earn more than half of the people like ever reach.
Mm-hmm.
That was just insane for me then. But yeah, in the end I got the Birmingham offer. Actually, all of my friends were telling me, just go for the Amazon job, they pay insane, just work for them. But I got the Birmingham offer, and that maybe is not even that bad per se. I think I would still prefer to work for Amazon for a year now and then apply again. But the stupidest thing I've done was that, because I was coming to university, I have this image that at university abroad, especially in the Russell Group, everyone will be super ambitious, everyone will want to be like entrepreneur, create new billion-dollar companies. And I just didn't want to miss, so I could work for Amazon as an intern, but I had to work for at least like 10 weeks or something, and this would cause me to miss Freshers Week and first 2 weeks of university, which is like completely worth it. But then I was thinking, during these first days, most connections are made, and I'll just lose out, it's not worth it. So I just decided I chose Freshers Week over Amazon. Which was, yeah, this is, I think, out of all decisions in my life, the decision I regret the most so far.
Right, so even from back then you were focused on building connections and networking.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't focusing on that much, but you know, just new university, new environment. I hoped to meet like new Zuckerberg and so on, so it was fueled by a dream of university abroad.
Yeah, from the American movies.
Yeah, exactly. I had a picture of Stanford, like, that everything is like Stanford abroad, you know?
Yeah. So the whole story took a funny twist because you started university, and after a year or so you started working for JP Morgan, and after that you worked for Amazon, right?
No, actually Amazon was first.
Amazon and
yeah.
JP Morgan.
Yeah.
So right now you're about to finish and you have two interesting offers. One that is paying a lot. I'm not going to name the company because I'm not sure if you want to. One that's not our focus on the amount of money they're giving you. And you chose the second one. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I can actually name. So actually, over this year, So I got first offer from JP Morgan from my internship that pays insane. And it's in Switzerland, so there's no tax, salary is high, life is amazing. But yeah, it just like working in the bank wasn't really for me. So I turned it down. Then I was actually referred by a very good friend that I worked with before as well to Google. And I passed both on screen and then on site. And got into kind of team matching phase, which is, you know, almost guaranteed at that point that you get an offer. You just have to match with the team. Team may not like you, may not like the team. You can say, I don't want to work for this team, they'll just find someone else. So it's more or less guaranteed that you get an offer. And Google, again, in Switzerland, pays insane amount of money and there's no tax almost at all because it's Switzerland. But yeah, and I was sure I'll accept this offer. To be fair, but then another friend, a really good friend, referred me to Komani when he works now, which is basically a scale up in Cambridge doing fraud detection. And I just went there without really thinking that I'll accept this. It was just more maybe to practice. Okay, there was this like 20% chance in my mind that I'll actually go for them, but didn't hope for much. And I went there and the whole process was sped up because I already finished on-site at Google Zurich and they knew I'm probably getting an offer soon. So they immediately fast-tracked me to the on-site where I had like two interviews, first technical, then data science. And I didn't know at all what to expect. I was pretty sure I actually failed this because I never had a proper data science interview. I went there, I had technical interview, this was easy, especially like compared to Google. Then data science interview, where I answered some questions, but I wasn't really sure if I answered them correctly or not, because I didn't know how normal data science interview should go. And then they decided to introduce me to the team, and they introduced me to one of the data scientists to just tell me, you know, for 5 minutes, how's it working for Feature Space's data scientist. So we went to the room, recruiter was supposed to come back in 5 minutes, and the guy just immediately started asking me, because we've heard I was doing some reinforcement learning at university. He immediately started asking me some deep reinforcement learning questions and how they can be applied to fraud detection. And we started talking about these different approaches that can be used to solve certain problem. The hiring manager came back after 15 minutes and was like, okay, so I think you, Kacper, already had enough time to ask about feature space. Maybe we could let him, you know, just go, probably has train or something. And the guy I talked with was really upset about this. So we decided to talk for another 15 minutes. And then hiring manager came back again and said that, okay, we should really let Kacper go. So the other guy told me that, okay, so if you have actually another interview, so we can come back after interviews to like, or after whatever you have now, so we can continue the discussion. And I told him that, oh, I'm sorry, actually, I don't have anything more here. I'm just going home, going back. I actually don't have a train or anything right now, but I'll stay in Cambridge, but they can process finish it at the company. And the guy just kind of proposed to that he can actually go to a cafeteria with me. I was like, okay, let's go. And we went to...
He wanted to take you out for a coffee.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. And we just went to the cafe near the office, got some lunch, and just started talking for another 2.5 hours, some deep maths, deep like machine learning, reinforcement learning, and how can it be applied. Yeah, it was just crazy. This guy was like just ex-Cambridge researcher before he did some string theory. Just the whole experience, like you go to the interview and you end up talking for 3 hours with the guy with some cool science. I mean, this was amazing. And in general, the whole team, extremely smart people, most of them ex-Cambridge researchers, because it's Cambridge spin-out. They were detecting like galaxies before, working on string theory, on computer science research, and now they just, you know, this company was created and they try to deal with the fraud problem. So even though they pay like 2 times less and taxes are 4 times higher in UK, I think it's still much, much worth it, just because I know the team is incredible. Whereas Google, of course, it's amazing company, but right now I didn't even know what would be the team I would join, and it's always, you know, very random thing. Plus, it would probably be not necessarily the field I'm really into.
So I'm not noticing a really interesting pattern here, that in the beginning, so before you came to university, you knew about networking, but were not that focused on it.
Yeah.
But I think that seems to have changed throughout the years, especially now with you've got referred to a couple of companies because you knew people.
Yeah.
Plus you ended up talking with this guy for a long period of time, and probably that helped as well.
Yeah.
How did your view towards networking change throughout the years, and what do you think about it right now?
So I mean, I'm not sure what was my view at the beginning, but definitely with time I realized networking is actually one of the most important things you can do. I think always my goal, like the reason I went to university, was not to learn, because to be fair, in computer science you can learn everything online way cheaper, and to be fair, way better. They can explain like the explanations on videos like on YouTube or some Coursera, whatever, is just so high quality. University can't really compete with that. Plus it's usually free or very cheap. But I think the biggest asset of university is basically people and networking. The people I meet here are incredible. And also the opportunities I get to network, going to conferences, even things like the university, just sometimes the name of the university opens some doors. And it has a lot of kind of schemes also to help students to network. There's a lot of societies where you can meet like-minded people. The interesting university is basically, I think the biggest of it is networking, but yeah, actually that's not the question you asked. In general, I think, networking, I think it may be the most important thing you can do in life. It's even parallel to your own work.
If you take a break now, then...
Oh, and I forgot to tell you in the beginning, so we noticed in the last video that I was doing that and Chongyu was doing that a bit too, that we were saying to get the conversation going, and right now I'm trying to not do that, just look at you and wait for the answer. So that's why I'm not giving any sound.
Yeah,
I have to close this. Everybody's sick nowadays.
Yeah. So I realized over the years at university, I always knew kind of networking is important, but over the time at the university, I really realized the power of it, because most, as you mentioned, you know, these referrals, like most of the things that happen now in life for me are because I know certain people. So, you know, we started together the project that really helped me later to progress in life, learn amazing things. And it actually started just because we knew each other. In the same way, you know, these referrals, the different conferences and opportunities that show up are very, very often just because I know certain people. And it's often even like completely random. You don't have to go meet people only that you need at that point. Most of the things, like really good opportunities that came up for me recently, are just because I just met this random person a year ago, and then it evolved into something way, you know, better that led me to progress.
Yeah, it was unexpected. You said something about being focused on reinforcement learning.
Yeah.
The part from AI.
Yeah.
So I know you did something pretty cool for your dissertation. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, that's actually, that was my past year, I would say, half a year. I was focusing on that. So, you know, it was dissertation time. I needed to choose my final project. And after our project together, I got really into reinforcement learning and decided that's something I really want to do. Plus, I decided it'd be cool to go much more into research. So I kind of try to use every opportunity to be close to kind of publishing papers or publish a paper and just do proper research work, because so far I experienced a bit of industry during internships. I experienced a bit of entrepreneurship during side projects, and kind of full-blown research wasn't something I experienced yet. So just, you know, to try it out. Plus, one of my goals is also to go possibly in a year or two do masters also at some other university to again network, and wanted to do something with my dissertation that I can later transform to so the point is, if I publish stuff, it's like way easier to get to better universities, like the top universities
for masters.
And, you know, decided that I want to do my dissertation on something that I can later actually contribute to science somehow. And knowing that I'm also really into reinforcement learning, it was just, you know, natural choice. So started reading some papers, actually a lot of papers, and realized there are certain problems in the area that are still kind of unsolved, and there's not that much work going on to solve these problems. So I found an opportunity to possibly improve the state of the art of reinforcement learning. And yeah, over the past half a year I worked on this, and right now results show that it actually performs better than the state of the art. Of course I need to test it much more, but I hope to publish this work over the summer. And actually there is one small caveat, because Google Brain released preprint exactly a month ago right now, I think, that is basically my dissertation almost. So that kind of sucks. I have a bit different approach, so I'll have to frame it properly, because they taken a lot of novelty from my dissertation. But yeah, it was definitely a really cool experience.
So work on that. So what does it do exactly? Because I saw your algorithm trying to land spaceships on the moon.
Oh yeah, but that's just kind of environment. So reinforcement learning is the goal of it is to, you have an agent in some environment, and this agent can perform certain actions, and for certain things it achieves, it basically gets a reward. It's like, you know, training a dog. It's reinforcement learning field in psychology. It's basically inspired by this. So if you want to train a dog to make a trick, whenever it makes a trick on command, you just give it a treat, and then learns with time that when you say command, it should make a trick. And the same with reinforcement learning, you have some agent in the environment, And whenever it achieves something, you just give it reward. Or when it does bad things, you can give it negative rewards, so kind of punishment. One of the environments I was training it on and testing it on is environment when you try to land spaceship on some planet, which, yeah, basically if it lands correctly, it gets a reward. And it's at the beginning, it just starts doing some random actions, crashing everywhere. It doesn't know what's going on. It doesn't know where it is. It doesn't know anything. But with time, learns that for certain things it gets reward and kind of learns to do these things. And my whole research was focused on improving data efficiency of reinforcement learning. So right now, there was a lot of huge successes in the field. A lot of people have heard about like AlphaGo and so on. This was all reinforcement learning. AlphaGo Zero, the same. Playing Atari games on superhuman level performance. It's all recently AlphaStar playing StarCraft. As well, also AI recently beat like poker players, top poker players in the world. And it's all amazing, but the only problem is that it needs enormous amounts of experience. It needs like millions of... So to reach superhuman level to reach human level performance on Atari games, it needs to play for over 7 days. If we, of course, with hardware, we can shorten it a lot, but 7 days, if it plays at 20 frames per second, so the usual human frame rate, it just needs to play constantly 7 days to reach that performance, where humans are measured after only 15 minutes of play. And it's not a problem, of course, in things like Go or Atari games, but if you want to, for example, teach self-driving car, or you want to have some agent that optimizes user experience on your website, every sample of experience can be very expensive, because you can't just let agent freely do millions of actions to optimize your website if at the beginning it just does some dumb stuff and annoys your customers and causes all of your customers to just stop buying for you or whatever. In the same way, you can't let self-driving car drive for ages doing just stupid things, because car will be destroyed, or in the worst case, accident involving humans, right? So we need to teach them, make them, allow them to learn much, much, much faster than that, using much less data. And that was the whole goal of my dissertation, which is actually also interesting because it's based on not that much recent, but neuroscience research, where neuroscientists realized that humans use, so we don't only learn based on life experience, we also later learn the model of the world and create our imagination, and then during sleep or just doing kind of daydreaming and so on, in mind we replay different scenarios and test different actions, how they may go, based on not real world but kind of internal model of the world that we created. And I was trying to implement that in artificial intelligence.
Okay, so you've done this paper and a lot of other things in the past, but I know that we talked actually about this. You don't care about waking up first thing in the morning, and it doesn't seem like you place that much emphasis on this whole idea of having a daily routine that improves you or helps you get to certain points. How come? Why is that?
So that's actually a good question. So I actually, first of all, I actually place importance in the routine. Should I first answer waking up early or the routine?
Whatever you want.
So let's read the routine. Let's read good things. So I actually think, in general, if you want to like do cool things, achieve certain things, the most basic things, you basically have to work hard and be persistent. Put just long hours, not 40 hours, but 60, 70, 80 hours a week. Because then just you're much more likely to achieve your goals. But then the problem is, actually working 8+ hours straight a day is not that easy. Even if you sit and try to work, your mind just gets tired very quickly. And a lot of people say they can work like 10, 12 hours, but usually that's... I recently watched an interview with Sam Altman, president of Y Combinator, and he actually said the same thing. Most of the people claim to work 100 hours work weeks, but most of the people can't really focus for 4 or more hours, and almost no one can focus for 8 plus hours within a single day.
And so continuously or throughout the day?
Continuously.
Continuous, okay.
Yeah. And I think, you know, having a routine, of course I have the same, with practice you can possibly put more, but then routines also help you to get even more out of it, so you don't get tired by simple things. So I actually really like to have a routine in a way that I don't have to think about anything besides work or the stuff I actually want to think in the day. So I really like to have scheduled all of the meals and planned what I eat, so I don't have to decide, because it's actually very tiring for me. I know it may be funny, but like when I have to think what I need to eat during the day and I have all of this work coming on, all of this stress and so on, just pure deciding what I want to eat and figuring out what I have in the fridge or what I need to buy, it just puts me completely out of, you know, kind of work. In the same way, basically eliminating all of the simple choices, you know, what to dress, what to eat, so you can leave this mental capacity on things that matter. So I like to kind of schedule this and have consistent routine through the day. So I always try to wake up the same time. I always try to go to like work the same hour. I finish at the same time. Then I eat dinner at the same time. I go to sleep at the same time. And I think that really helps you to like make the work day, actually the productive part of work day, longer, just because you don't use your mental capacity for meaningless things. But in terms of waking up early, you know, there are these different hacks that are kind of popular, but this just don't seem to work that well for me. So I always feel actually better waking up a bit later, like 9, 8. Though I could probably wake up 4 or 5 as well. I just don't think it matters that much. Mm-hmm. I think what actually matters is that you wake up consistently at the same time, because that's, you know, scientifically proven that actually, basically your sleep, your body kind of gets accustomed to a certain schedule, and it's, you know, just naturally wakes up at some point and actually gets sleepy at some point. And it kind of, if you keep on schedule, it's fine enough. But yeah, in general, kind of having a routine, a fixed schedule, I think is important, just for mental capacity. Yeah.
So what you said about routines, I think Obama was doing the same thing, or still is. He was dressing the same way every single day, and Steve Jobs, I think, was doing the same thing.
And
that's
Zuckerberg
why,
as well.
And Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Right, so this is a pattern those people at high level used to.
I didn't do it, but then I realized quite recently that it works this way. I really like to have just, I put one day onto, I work just on this, and I don't think about anything else. I just work on this. And I didn't start doing it. I knew that they were doing it, but I actually didn't start. What's interesting, I didn't start doing this because just wanted to test it out. I just found out I really hate deciding, especially in the morning, what to wear, what to eat, because it's just, my brain, it just uses so much power of my brain. So just like so hard choices. So like having everything scheduled. But I actually don't wear the same stuff every day. And actually I'm also, I try to have everything scheduled. But recently I kind of stopped doing just that, which is bad mostly because of deadlines. But it's bad because I stopped doing that. It was also even harder to keep up with deadlines. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I tried doing this. I think that can actually really help.
Okay, so that's the thing that gets you to do all these awesome stuff.
Yeah, and that basically it makes your day also repeatable. So even if you don't feel that's your day, you just do... It's like, actually it's a bit like with skydiving, you know? You just train something 10 times of times, and once you're up there, you don't think, you're not like, oh no, I'm not gonna jump. You just do it, you don't think, it's just automatic. And the same way, I think if you put this schedule, you do exactly the same things in the day. If you have worst day and you feel like, I just don't want to work, at all. You just won't even think about this. You just automatically go. And you'll automatically, you know, just put these hours consistently, which is important, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, now I want to ask you a question I'm personally interested in, very interested in. I know that you have a mentor, and nowadays there's a big focus on that,
yeah.
On having a mentor, someone that has managed to accomplish what you want to do. So, if you want to find a mentor, and if you actually are able to find that person, how do you approach them? How do you go about telling them that they pretty much have to take on a full job if they accept you?
So that's actually a very good question that I really don't answer to, because I actually had two mentors, like proper mentors over time at university, but mostly I got them actually through the mentoring schemes at the university. So I really didn't have to ask them myself. It was just, we were matched and, you know, hey, you're my mentor now. yeah, I actually would like to know a proper answer to the question as well, I guess.
So, okay, we'll continue asking that question. Maybe we'll get the kind of answer you're interested in as well.
Okay, yeah, that's...
But I think you can tell us, how is it like to have a mentor? How does he help you? When do you ask him questions? What kind of questions do you ask him?
That's also a very good question. So, I mean, I think I treated mentorship, at least the opportunities I had, mostly as well as networking. So I know this person personally, I'm personally connected, and, you know, when it's needed or where there's opportunity, I can kind of leverage my network. But yeah, usually, I try to basically stay in touch at least once per month, 2 months, have a chat and talk about recent things, opinion of my mentor on them. I actually usually personally kind of create my own opinions on things quite quickly. So once we have a call, I already am pretty defined, but still it's always good to see other person's perspective, especially if it's, you know, a successful person already.
So you, before you approach him, you go prepared, you want to show them that you've tried this and that and...
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even go necessarily prepared in that I tried this and that. I mean, if I have choices that are not obvious or hard or important, I just think about them, think about different different scenarios, and then tell them my opinion, what I struggle with, and ask their opinion, what they think about this. So it's just another input to my kind of thinking process.
Okay.
Yes.
And besides having a human mentor, someone you can go effectively and ask a question, what other sources of information do you rely upon? As in, do you have some favorite books, or do you have TV shows or podcasts, maybe?
Before I'm successful.
Thank you. Did you hear that? It's before I'm successful. So that's your final answer, right?
Yes, that's my final answer.
Let's move on to the final question.
But yeah, usually, to be fair, I don't read that many books. I should read more. I read more before. Yeah, there was one book, I don't remember the title, but that actually also was very transformative for me during high school. But usually I just think, like...
What was it about?
Actually, it was... So, because I'm a tech guy, I kind of used to be very, and I'm kind of still, pretty autistic, you know? And this book was basically... It was targeted to our salespeople. It was called something, you know, How to Influence People, but it wasn't one of the most famous ones, so it wasn't by Carnegie or Cialdini. It was by someone else. Yeah, it was basically about influencing people, about sales techniques. So, you know, if you smile, people like you more.
Persuasion.
Yeah, basically persuasion. And that was very transformative, because we can say, learned social skills properly from the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of changed me, like moved me much into networking, much more into talking with people, you know, going to conferences and yeah, just basically networking, and also being able to partially persuade people
right.
in certain scenarios. But in general, in case of sources of information, I think I think one of the people here already said about this, Paul Graham's blog posts are incredible.
I don't think anyone said about that, Paul Graham.
Yeah, from Y Combinator. In general, all of the resources that Y Combinator gives, especially for entrepreneurs. And then, you know, depending on what you want to learn, basically, internet is incredible. Whenever I struggle with something, whenever I have questions, whenever I want to learn something, I just literally Google it and answers there. If you don't look only in one source at one source, but look at different sources, the answers you can find, I think, are often better than you can get from any mentor.
Okay.
It's just you have access to whole knowledge of the world at your phone. It's just incredible. So I would say just. If you want to know something, just Google it, because if you won't find something on the internet, you'll at least find a book, for example, that talks about this.
Okay,
that's
a really interesting perspective. So when you go online with the purpose of finding an idea, how do you go about making sure that you are not getting inspired by bullshit articles or fake news that are really prevalent right now?
Yeah.
How do you go about making sure that the source of information is high quality?
So that's also a question. I think I don't really base my, rely on the internet in terms of politics that much. And most of the unreliable sources are in this term. Because if you actually want to do some science stuff, you know, want to learn artificial intelligence, programming and so on, then, you know, the stuff you find there won't be actually a bad thing. It will be just a question if this is the most efficient way to learn or there's a bit better. But still, you will, in the end, you'll learn actually the proper stuff in majority of the cases.
Right.
And if you've learned some bad things, and with time, if you practice, you'll kind of learn these were bad things. So in case of actually getting knowledge, kind of technical knowledge, it's not a problem. In case of more
subjective things.
Yeah. So, like, for example, yeah, what to do to be successful, there's actually a lot of scams and so on in that point.
For instance, there are lots of scams about trading.
Yeah. So I try to assess the credibility of the source. So if I see this is by some company that's really established, you know, Fortune 500, then I trust them. Usually, if it's founded by some people who are actually, you know, legitimate, like from very respected universities. So for example, I was in Coursera, that's founded by Stanford professor, or, you know, just I look for this information that just gives credibility to it. And if it's, and also a lot of opinions, because if something is shady, most of the time you'll find this on the opinions about this. And, you know, if there are no opinions about this and I don't know where it comes from and it's hard for me to assess, then yeah, I just ignore it. So mostly opinions and looking at the actual credibility of the institution that provide the source, and also then checking if maybe it's not a biased view because this organization stands for something.
Okay.
Or no. Yeah.
So a few days ago, I asked you what other impressive things or interesting things you've done in the past, let's say, year or 6 months.
Okay.
And you told me about starting a company, and you didn't tell me the whole story because I wanted to be surprised about it right now as well, because I didn't know anything about it. Can you talk about that?
So that's actually also a good part of networking. So I'll also go bit back before telling the whole story, but
okay.
A year ago in March I went to hackathon at University of Edinburgh, and I just mainly went there because I have a friend there and I just wanted to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And hackathon offered to, you know, reimburse the travel tickets, and of course there's free food, so it was perfect opportunity. I went to hackathon, I joined some team, and to be fair, the whole hackathon was like, I think from all the hackathons I attended, that was the worst experience I had. I didn't really like my team. I didn't like what we were doing. I usually love hackathons, but I really didn't like this one.
Okay.
But there was one person in my team that actually loved it, and he was incredible. So, hackathon finished, things just went in a normal way. And in May, June, this just, random person I met one time in the team just messaged me that he actually started working on some side project with another guy he met at the hackathon. And do you want to join us? Because this was like summer holidays coming, I had a bit more free time, but actually not that much. So I decided, I can see, if I can help somehow, maybe join, but still without committing fully. And this kind of continued like this till quite recently. We're just working on certain kind of products as a side project. And actually a few months ago, we developed a product for automotive industry to kind of just increase safety and driver experience in the new generation of cars.
So you're doing that through AI, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it actually started getting traction. We got in touch with a lot of automotive companies, a few Fortune 500 as well. We decided now to, over the past few months to push it, make it kind of serious. And Leo, the guy who I met at the hackathon, and then we just started randomly working on this project, contacted, I think hundreds of people on LinkedIn, on email, and a few of them got back, and we have a call scheduled with some Fortune 500 companies and a few smaller ones as well, coming soon. So it's nothing, we don't have any deal closed yet, but it's getting interesting. And basically because we started talking with companies, already incorporated the company, and the whole idea of it is to provide personalized technology solutions to more traditional companies and kind of medium-sized businesses. But, not just any technology solutions, but basically bring the cutting edge from universities and big tech to companies that don't really have budgets, don't really have money, or are not interested in these things, but these things can actually really help them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole kind of vision of the company. But right now we're focusing to push this one product through. We have a few calls. If this doesn't work out, we have a few contacts, all of us around, with basically more traditional companies to get them, we know what are their problems more or less, and we can basically tell them we can save you this and this amount of time and money, creating you this solution.
So it is obvious that you know a lot about AI and you are involved in the industry. What is, in your opinion, the future of AI? But not the future as in 10 years from now, because I know that's hard to predict. For 2019 and 2020.
That's a good question. I'm actually not... I worked a lot in AI, but I'm definitely not a role model or anything. I actually have...
Your
opinion so much
about
to
technology.
Know. Yeah, but I think so. There was this whole thing about deep learning. It still is an emergence of all of these algorithms can process huge amounts of data and do incredible things based on them. But they're all based on supervised learning, and other parts. So there are three types of this deep learning: supervised learning, unsupervised learning, and reinforcement learning. Actually, these are three parts of machine learning, not specifically deep learning. And most focus was put on supervised learning, but I think it's a bit oversaturated right now. So, it may be a biased opinion, but I hope so at least. And that's also one of the reasons why I went into reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning wasn't that popular yet and wasn't actually used that much yet. And I think with next year, two or three, we'll just see much, much more applications of actual reinforcement learning in practice in the industry.
Okay, so which industries do you think are going to be revolutionized the most?
So, I mean, most of industries are already partially revolutionized by machine learning. In terms of purely reinforcement learning, because in case of machine learning, it's hard to tell for me, because I think most of the transformations were possibly made, because I know even agriculture and so on is big on that. In terms of reinforcement learning, I know what's happening right now is a lot of hedge funds poached guys from OpenAI and Google DeepMind to create their own proper research AI teams. And these guys, both OpenAI and DeepMind, are actually reinforcement learning oriented. So I think there will be, you know, supervised learning was applied in for quantitative hedge funds for ages already. But reinforcement learning is much harder. And I think finance, as basically trading, will start to be more and more transformed for reinforcement learning.
Okay.
And then possibly, you know, yes, we have autonomous cars coming in, which is also reinforcement learning.
Right.
Hopefully it'll come soon and be usable, because they progress all the time.
So the most likely right now is finance.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Just looking at the markets, yeah.
So right now we're going to move towards the two final questions, the challenge and the one about stoicism. So Casper, let's just assume right now that you have 24 hours left to live. What are you going to do in these 24 hours?
Oh, probably proper answer is to do the same as you do every day, right?
Yeah, no.
But
that's not...
I would not want to say that, actually, because I wouldn't... I mean, I really enjoy like what I'm doing in life, but yeah, my plans are more long-term, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just had one day, I mean, I know... You know, learning and doing the stuff I do now, although I really enjoy it, but it wouldn't benefit me in the future because I just would be dead, right? So
sure.
I would probably just, plus my answer actually be biased because I'm really overworked after the recent dissertation sprint. most probably, I think I would just want to chill, just go somewhere nice. But also that it's close, so I don't fly there for half a day.
Right.
Like Italy, just chill, have a walk on the beach, and then just get some friends and family together, get some nice dinner with nice food, wine, and just talk, chill, and reflect on life, I guess.
Right, reflect on life.
Yeah.
And would you do the same thing if you had 7 days?
If I had 7 days. That's actually a hard one, because it's not like you're dying immediately, but you're still dying soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually a hard one. I think possibly I would... Okay, so I guess answer research... Every information possible about how to survive more than a week is not a good answer.
That is unexpected. Okay, that's a new answer. Okay. That's a good one.
So that's, I mean, what I would do, because life is amazing, actually, and
so,
having a week sucks.
So you don't think, even if I told you that it's certain that you're going to die in 7 days, you believe that there is still a chance that you can take control over your life and find a way to live more.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a way.
Okay, I like that. And 3 years, finally.
I mean, so then if that answer is accepted, then probably I'll just spend whole 3 years trying to find a cure for whatever I have. And then actually I could... Because, okay, unless this is just some random thing that... the thing that controls the universe just says, you will die. But if it's actually some legit thing that makes me die in 3 years, then if I cured myself... I could then also make money on curing other people. So I could create business that cures the stuff that I have. That would be...
I like that answer. It's a new one, unexpected. Okay, and finally, the challenge?
Okay, so I don't, because basically I don't have anything daily.
Mm-hmm.
I could propose, because my day is just having a strict routine, so I don't have to think about things. That could be potential. That could be potentially a challenge, but yeah, I think most important is the thing that worked for me, especially in high school. Recently, I actually stopped doing that much, but I want to get back to it. Is to have a clear defined goals, and knowing, you know, what you strive for, and then knowing what's the next big thing you need to achieve towards your main long-term 10-year, 20-year goal. So I think the challenge could be just, you know, think what actually is life for you, what do you want to achieve, whether it's, I don't know, money, whether it's just having a company and being free, whether it's just having freedom to travel, I don't know, love of your life, whatever that is. Just write it down as your main goal in life, and then find what's the next possible step to achieve that.
Okay, so is it waking up every morning and deciding, okay, today I'm going to do this so that I can get there?
Not necessarily that, although that could be the next step. So the next big thing I would say is, okay, let's say your main goal in life is to be a billionaire.
Right.
Right, or whatever. So then, of course, you just won't go around being a billionaire immediately. So just kind of put it more into more few phases. So let's say, okay, if I want to be a billionaire, I need to, my next big step could be getting out of, I don't know, my village and
right.
getting into like place with top people. So I don't know, getting a job at Silicon Valley or whatever, or getting to Stanford. And then you can even put it down. So, okay, to get there, what do I need to do? Maybe I should get some experience and get an internship. And basically, if you're like in high school, for example, as I know I was, and you need to, and you have this big goal, then you can say, okay, the next big thing that will really help me, put me to the next level, is doing an internship. And the thing I want to achieve now, to achieve then later, big goal in the future, is just getting an internship.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just this one small, like once, not stuff you do daily, but the achievement you want to achieve within a year or half a year.
I see.
Next achievement to get then into this, closer to this main goal in life. So yeah, just write it down, think about this.
So trying to burst your bubble towards the
yeah,
final
yeah.
goal and
just
taking steps every single day
yeah.
towards that.
Yeah, so just basically think about the thing that puts you into this step higher, this higher level a bit.
I like that. Casper, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
The viewers, if you like what you saw, if you enjoyed hearing Casper's story, please subscribe to the channel, because every single week on Sunday, we're going to release a new interview with amazing people such as Casper. And we have big plans for this channel. So subscribe and join us.